Good morning, this is Justin Nyoni. It's Friday, the 11th of December. Welcome to Old Money University. This is your host, Justin Nyoni. Welcome. Today, I'm talking about how to build your brand. And I've got also another very, very interesting speech audio. Just taking you back, those history fans, which I'm one of them. I've got a speech by the President John F. Kennedy. His inaugural speech in 1961, and it's got that famous line, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I think that's a, when I listen to the speech again, I always heard the ask not what America can do for, what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. But what I heard also in the thing, which is quite amazing, he says to the world, he says, ask not what America can do for you, you know, but what we can do together. And I think it's 50 or so years later, it's still a speech that's still powerful, that still resonates with what's happening around the world right now. And I think it applies to, especially since I'm sitting in Africa, but it's something that we need to look at as Africans or as Black people in general, wherever you're staying, whether you're an African-American or you're an African-African in Africa, just like me. But that question, ask not what your country can do for you, you know, because that's my perspective. But with a lot of people protesting and, asking what their country can do for them and what their country hasn't done for them, you know, I think it's important to get back to JFK's message of ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. That shift in focus, you know, from being a complaining mindset to being a complaining, to being in a space where there is this protest. What are we doing for us? What hasn't been done for us? What needs to be done more for us? You know, and we've been through it and we're going through it right now in South Africa, where this big welfare system has been created. And, being an immigrant, I'm from Zimbabwe, so coming into South Africa and seeing the effects of a welfare state. So to those who don't know what a welfare state is, it's when the government starts to give benefits to the poor, pensioners, so it comes in different forms, but whether it's cash payouts, here in South Africa, it's cash payouts to young children, I think under 18, they get a monthly check. Then you get other forms of welfare, like free medical, expenses paid, free hospitals, free schools, primary school, high school, and lots of other minor benefits. Those are the major welfare benefits. And, here being in South Africa, it's become such a big drag on the economy because you've got this huge population of poor Black people predominantly, and a sprinkling of colored people, but you've got a predominantly disadvantaged, it's what they call historically disadvantaged Black and colored people. And the welfare state, it's got lots of effects. I think I always like to take Lee Kuan Yew's position. Lee Kuan Yew is, I always quote this man, he is the former prime minister of Singapore. But when he was building Singapore, when he took over Singapore, he was 35, you know, and he took over the nation of Singapore. And one thing that he determined was, first of all, he said, we're not going to be a bigger state. You know, at the time, we're not going to be a state that's going to survive on foreign aid. And there are a lot of other countries like where I come from, we are surviving on foreign aid. So we're not going to survive on the begging bowl. He took the no begging bowl approach. So he went on a tour in America, spoke to business executives. And one of the things that he says, when I always spoke to them, I always told them, Singapore, we've taken the stance, we're not going to survive on British foreign aid. We're not going to survive on handouts from other countries, but we're going to, you know, button down and work and produce and become productive. And the second thing is, at the time, Britain was moving towards a very socialistic kind of policies, which is welfare, you know, free health, universal health care, unemployment benefits and stuff like that. And all those things created, because it creates huge spending for the government. And it's created a drag on the British economy at the time. And it's spread all through Europe and America. And so the big welfare state is something that we should be very much careful about. And it's happened here in South Africa, where there's a big welfare thing. And it's become a huge drag on the economy, especially because the South African economy is not growing that broadly. It is not growing that fast to be able to carry the 50. I think I saw a stat about youth unemployment in South Africa, which I think is clocked at 50, more than 50% youth unemployment. So, okay, so without talking too much about all that, okay, so we were talking about JFK's, without getting into too much detail about the welfare state, but going back to the speech, President John F. Kennedy's speech, ask not what your country can do for you. I think it's also a personal attitude in terms of the moment anybody calls you historically disadvantaged. I was just thinking about the statement itself. The moment you called historically disadvantaged, the moment you start to point to the past as being a disadvantaged people, the moment you take a victim position, I think people who label you a victim are more racist than those who ignore you. I think, you know, being labeled a victim hasn't helped. It hasn't helped Africa. It's not going to help African Americans. It's not going to help anybody. I think you need to take personal responsibility. And what Lee Kuan Yew did in Singapore, which I always preach about this man, is that he spoke to the Singaporeans and had them to look into themselves and said, we're going to be a nation. We're going to be rugged. We're going to work hard. We're going to look within ourselves to save ourselves. We're not going to survive on foreign aid. We're not going to be complainers. They were also British colonies. I think they went under, you know, they were colonized by the British. They were also colonized by the Japanese. You know, unlike us, we're always complaining about British colonies, you know, in Africa and French colonies, and we were French colonies and British colonies. But, and these guys were even colonized by the Japanese. So it is a whole book where he speaks about it, the pain that he faced under Japanese occupation. But, you know, when he took over, what he managed to do was to encourage people to look within themselves, you know, and he took a stance which was very different at the time from other nations, including ours, you know, because when Singapore got its independence from the British and then they split from Malaysia, what happens was at the time, a lot of African, not just African, but a lot of colonies, basically Britain was going under the decolonization period. So Ghana, Nigeria, that's in Africa, were going through their independence also. So, I mean, they were in the very much the same context. Their economies looked the same, and they were at the same level of development. But the difference is what's happened now, when you look at where Singapore is and where the African countries are, is the approach that Lee Kuan Yew took, where he said to his population, we're not going to rely on foreign aid. Whereas, you know, we're not going to be victims. You know, we're not going to survive on the begging bowl. Number one, we're not going to survive on what the British are going to give us. We're going to make new markets. We're going to, you know, work. We're going to be employed. We're going to bring in foreign people. We're going to work and we're going to gain skills. We're going to educate ourselves and we're going to create an economy. You know, we're going to be self-sufficient, basically. So it's a personal attitude that's been infused into the people. And that's the power of a leader. Because, you know, when we... And that's, I think, one of the biggest problems that South Africa is facing. And the problems also that people you need to understand is that South Africa is the biggest economy in Africa, the most advanced economy in Africa. So you cannot have a developed Africa if you don't have a leading South Africa. You know, leadership cannot start from the small nations. It can, but then the effects are not going to be the same. When the leadership starts with the big South African economy, that's when you're going to see a real movement in Africa. As long as South Africa is growing at 2%, 3%, with a huge welfare drag, with 50% youth unemployment, it's going to have an effect on the rest of Africa. As much as the growth of China has had big effects on Southeast Asia, on the Asian countries around them, it's the same thing. Because that's the biggest country, the biggest economy around the region. So as that region is growing, as that country is growing, other small nations can really, really grow from there, including... So it's the same thing. Countries like Zimbabwe, Zambia, Botswana, they need the giant South Africa to be growing. Countries like the DRC, we need South Africa. So, but then when you... That's where I'm so pessimistic in terms of the prospects of Africa. But when you look at the attitude in South Africa, what the welfare state does is that basically when you get onto the ground, it's taken away that self-sufficiency from black people here in South Africa, where most of them are sitting there and looking to what the government can do for them. I mean, I've lived through how many protests of give us more this, give us more that, more healthcare, more free healthcare. And, you know, living close to the community, you get to realize the attitudes, you know, and you get to realize when you know, immigrants come from another country. When Zimbabweans come to South Africa, when Malawians come to that end, because there are a lot of immigrants coming into South Africa. But you look at the differences in the way they develop, you know, because these guys are coming in with no state benefits other than the indigenous South Africans. But you look at how they develop. And why? Because when people come in with a self-sufficiency mindset, you know, when you come in and you don't have you don't have a backup plan. The government is not going to give you anything for free. When you come from that place where nothing is for free, you've got an advantage. You've got an ethic, you know. Fathers play their role, you know. You've got a work ethic that's different from the guy who knows that tomorrow he's going to get a check from the government. So anyway, so it's one of those attitudes that we need to. So when people talk about, we need to really explore, and you know, in trying to solve the problems of poverty, we have to be careful not to create more poverty in trying to do that. You cannot solve poverty problems from a pity perspective. Any policy that comes from that perspective, you cannot solve what's happening in America right now about the Black Lives Matter. You cannot solve if there is racism happening. You cannot solve it from that victim mentality. You know, there are white people who look at blacks from a victim point of view, from an oppressed point of view. You know, that kind of pity, oh, sorry, you are historically this, historically. That's not going to help them as much as it hasn't helped in Africa. It will cement a victim attitude. It will cement that attitude of the state needs to do something for me. Whereas we need to be encouraging people to ask what they can do for the state. What can the African Americans do to contribute to the American economy? What can they do to contribute to technology? What can they do, as much as they've contributed a lot in terms of the culture? Right now, the whole world is in hip-hop culture. That is coming from the Black Americans. They have contributed to the global economy. You know, African-American culture is all over the world now. Their music, I listen to it. I grew up on African-American music. I grew up on Tupac. I grew up on Biggie. I grew up on Jay-Z. That's an American export. Those are the bright spots that people need to shine a light on. This is what the Black American culture has done for the world. When you look at the sportsmen, you know, the NBA basketball players, how they've become global lights. Those are the bright spots that we need to focus on and not to look at the other way, you know. So ask not. People should ask not what, you know, African Americans should not ask not what the government is supposed to do for them or what white people are supposed to do for them. No, ask what you can do to contribute. Right now, America is under the gun. There is the Chinese are coming for your bread. Huawei is growing. I mean, it's significant. And all this has happened only in the last 20, 30 years. What's going to happen in the next 50 years? China is definitely going to be the biggest economy in the world. They're definitely going to be the biggest, most advanced military. Look at their gains in artificial intelligence. And they don't have all the regulations that you have. They don't have the squabbling of, you know, the slowness of the democracy. They've got a central government that's willing to put money where it needs to be. So America needs the African Americans to be contributing to the economy as they have been. And that contribution needs to be highlighted. We need to encourage them. Ask them what they can do for the country. And it's an attitude that we should take even here in Africa. As much as I want to lecture the African Americans, but we've got the same problems here, where we sit there and complain all the time, you know. Excuse me. Where we sit there and complain all the time about our government. What is our government doing? What is our government doing wrong? And those are true and very, very accurate things in terms of pointing out things that the government is not doing. But we also need to adopt the attitude of what do we do? What are we doing to contribute to the economy? What are we doing to contribute to Africa? What are we doing to become a shining light to the Africans? To the Africans in our continent and around the world. So anyway, I can go on and on about this, but let me make this as an introduction to JFK's famous speech, Ask Not What Your Country Can Do For You, 1961 inauguration, presidential inauguration, very, very significant historical figure, President John F. Kennedy. I think he was the youngest president, if he's not one of the youngest presidents who's ever taken the seat at the Oval Office. But JFK's presidency was a shift in generations. For the first time, a new generation was taking over, you know, the leadership in America. And there was just a new consciousness in the 60s. where Americans were beginning to be conscious about the world. And I think he was so significant in terms of the way he impacted American culture. So anyway, be encouraged, be blessed, listen to the speech, and benefit from it. See you.
Vice President Johnson, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chief Justice, President Eisenhower, Vice President Nixon, President Truman, Reverend clergy, fellow citizens. We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now, for man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. This much we pledge and more. To those old allies whose cultural and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do, for we dare not meet a powerful challenge at odds and split asunder. To those new states whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonial control shall not have passed away merely to be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall not always expect to find them supporting our view, but we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom, and to remember that in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside. To those people in the huts and villages of half the globe, struggling to break the bonds of mass misery, We pledge our best efforts to help them help themselves. For whatever period is required, not because the communists may be doing it, not because we seek their votes, but because it is right. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. To our sister republics south of our border, we offer a special pledge to convert our good words into good deeds, in a new alliance for progress, to assist free men and free governments in casting off the chains of poverty. But this peaceful revolution of hope cannot become the prey of hostile powers. Let all our neighbors know that we shall join with them to oppose aggression or subversion anywhere in the Americas. And let every other power know that this hemisphere intends to remain the master of its own house. To that World Assembly of Sovereign States, the United Nations, our last best hope, in an age where the instruments of war have far outpaced the instruments of peace, we renew our pledge of support to prevent it from becoming merely a forum for invective, to strengthen its shield of the new and the weak, and to enlarge the area in which its writ may run. Finally, to those nations who would make themselves our adversary, we offer not a pledge, but a request that both sides begin anew the quest for peace. Before the dark powers of destruction, unleashed by science, engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. We dare not tempt them with weakness, for only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt can we be certain beyond doubt that they will never be employed. But neither can two great and powerful groups of nations take comfort from our present course. Both sides overburdened by the cost of modern weapons, both rightly alarmed by the steady spread of the deadly atom, yet both racing to alter that uncertain balance of terror that stays the hand of mankind's final war. So let us begin anew, remembering on both sides that civility is not a sign of weakness, and sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. Let both sides explore what problems unite us, instead of belaboring those problems which divide us. Let both sides, for the first time, formulate serious and precise proposals for the inspection and control of arms, and bring the absolute power to destroy other nations under the absolute control of all nations. Let both sides seek to invoke the wonders of science instead of its terrors. Together, let us explore the stars, conquer the deserts, eradicate disease, tap the ocean depths, and encourage the arts and commerce. Let both sides unite to heed, in all corners of the earth, the command of Isaiah to undo the heavy burdens and let the oppressed go free. And if a beachhead of cooperation may push back the jungle of suspicion, let both sides join in creating a new endeavor, not a new balance of power, but a new world of law, where the strong are just and the weak secure and the peace preserved. All this will not be finished in the first 100 days, nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin. In your hands, my fellow citizens, more than mine, will rest the final success or failure of our course. Since this country was founded, each generation of Americans has been summoned to give testimony to its national loyalty. The graves of young Americans who answered the call to service surround the globe. Now the trumpet summons us again, not as a call to bear arms, though arms we need, not as a call to battle, though in battle we are, but a call to bear the burden of a long twilight struggle, year in and year out, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, a struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself. Can we forge against these enemies a grand and global alliance, north and south, east and west, that can assure a more fruitful life for all mankind? Will you join in that historic effort? In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man. Finally, whether you are citizens of America or citizens of the world, ask of us here the same high standards of strength and sacrifice which we ask of you. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.
Okay, this is the end of the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And please, please, please subscribe Old Money University on Spotify. Let's grow the community. Tell a friend and send me a message, please. I would like to hear from you, where you're listening from. If something has been of encouragement or has helped you in any way, I would really, really appreciate it. Hit me up on Twitter, on Facebook, and I'll see you next time.